The future belongs to the fast. The digital economy is driving business and industry into unprecedented transformation. Visionaries, disruptors, those bent on reinventing the way things get done, are turning to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. With years of experience in delivering what's new and what's next, this new company is positioned better than ever to deliver the IT solutions to propel you into the future. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Accelerating next.
Hello everyone, welcome to edition 124 of the NRF1 podcast. That's put a smile on Ped's face right there. We're here to preview the 2016 Hungarian Grand Prix as we enter the halfway stage of this epic, Freudian slip, Formula One season, 21 races this year, and we're at round 11 as we head to Budapest. This is the NRF1 podcast on Acast and on iTunes and all across the world wide web. And we are looking forward to delving into the details. My name is Michael Bailey. I'm here with Richard Baxter, Carl Cumbers and Perry Hamilton. Rich, we haven't done this yet because we're going to do it on the way out. You've got a new car.
I have, yeah. It's amazing.
This is a Mustang, isn't it? And there are, one or two of them around, but I suppose we're digging in for another Ford sponsorship here, aren't we? DT's not here today, by the way. He's reviewing another Ford car, so I think he must be in there paying.
Is this the one they probably sent him after the last podcast?
I hope so. Do you think they're just sending him the cars off the back of all our advertising?
That's exactly what's happening. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Rumbled DT. Anyway, yeah, you've got a Ford too, so you're probably on their payroll too, Rich. But just describe it in maybe a word or a noise.
I don't know.
And when are you taking us all out in it and allowing us all to drive it?
First one, I mean, whenever you might have to, someone might have to try and fit in the back, it's quite tight. The last one, we'll see.
Oh, I'm going to keep wishing. I'll take a tip for you with a track day, it'll be fine. Just let me ride. Oh, the noises he's making now. Kyle, no football for you this weekend. It's all over, isn't it? The football's done.
Yeah, all done. Waiting for start of the Norwich season.
Yeah, we're going to stop that conversation right there and enjoy some Formula One. Ped, you must be looking forward to Hungary. What a great track.
I do like Hungary, and I like Hungary because it's one of those heritage tracks that people don't. It's not the one that always jumps to mind as being a long-standing Formula One race environment. It's not the one that people always go, oh yeah, do you remember that? Oh, that people probably, I mean, your hardcore fans could, but your average Formula One fan probably couldn't name the corners, you know, like we can at places like Spa and Monaco that have got those storied histories. But it is a fantastic track. It's a really, really good one, and it usually delivers.
It does usually deliver. More of that to come. Do you like us getting personal on the pod?
I've no problem with you getting personal on the pod.
Are the wedding preparations going well?
Yes, wedding preparations are going very well. For those listening, I get married next month. It's been an engagement 4 years. We've been engaged 4 years, but we actually only booked the date about five, six months ago. So it all went a little bit crazy and quick, but it's been going really, really well. And everyone that's helped out and, you know, with everything has been great. So about 5 weeks to go as of Thursday. And we're recording this on a Monday, just so people know what the timelines are. But
so you can all count down to Ped's wedding. We should do a live podcast.
I mean,
that's obviously the first thing you'd like to do during
the week. Yeah. Well, you know, Michael, I know I've received your RSVP, Michael, so I know you'll be there. So yeah, bring it along. We'll get some snaps and we'll do stuff. You can get an interview with the father-in-law. So you can get an interview with the father of the bride and the father of the groom. They're both big Formula One fans.
Is this right? Oh, you've tempted me. They might actually do it.
Tom's already been on the podcast by accident when he said hello with my commentary. And those of you who remember a long, long time ago, we had one tweet from my father who made a Twitter handle specifically just so he could tweet us. And his Twitter handle was Ped's dad.
And I don't is that account still in existence?
Yeah, it is, but I don't think he's ever been on Twitter since. So
we should dig that tweet out and retweet it.
We should retweet Dad's tweet. Yeah, we'll do that.
You do that. We'll do that together. Brilliant stuff. We could call it the NRF Wed. Does that work? No.
Most importantly, does the wedding fall on a F1 weekend?
It's on a Thursday, so I've managed to avoid that.
It was Monaco.
Fortunately, well,
Then you could have had it in Monaco.
What time of year is it you've got the date set for?
What, for the wedding?
Yeah.
So,
5 weeks.
Summertime, August.
So that could be around maybe Spa?
Well,
you could have quite a honeymoon going if you...
We can't honeymoon until next year because the other half's a teacher.
Well, then you've got a whole calendar to choose from.
It'll be April. It'll be the honeymoon next year.
You can go to Monaco.
We're going to Hawaii.
We've already decided.
They don't have a Formula One race in.
Can you imagine a Formula One race in Hawaii? I don't know where they'd put it. But
difficult for the fans to get to.
Yeah.
My wife would then come with me to that race.
I would say.
She wouldn't watch the race, but she would definitely be in Hawaii for the race. Anyway, I feel like we should move on. What a wonderful... Congratulations, obviously, Ped, for the future and for what's coming. Let's kick off the pod, shall we, as we usually do, with some news. Now, there hasn't been that much news, and obviously some of it's from a little while back, but we were too busy reviewing the wonders of the British Grand Prix. So, let's get stuck into it properly. Kimi Raikkonen is staying on at Ferrari until 2017. As a man who predicted this would be his last year in Formula One, no, I'm not happy about that. Are you happy about that? Oh. Thumbs down.
That is a big thumbs down. That's a bad move for Ferrari. That is a bad move for Ferrari. Look, we like Kimi, okay? We do. We are known on the podcast as being fairly big Iceman fans. We love his radio messages. We love when he gets lost and tries to navigate his way around, escape roads. And more importantly than that, we love when he has an ice cream on TV. We there's a lot to like about Kimi, but I will say this: as a Formula One driver in a top tier team, he is on the decline. He is not. I know he's outperforming Seb this year, but he's never going to be a viable championship contender again. Fact. That's not going to happen. If he needs a spot in a team, it needs to be with a team to help develop a younger driver, or a mid-card team that's looking for that guy that can get them on the podium, that can get those fourth place points, that can really bring them in. So I'm talking about your Force Indias, I'm talking about your Williams, those kind of places. At the moment, that Ferrari seat needs to go to a younger, more exciting, more promising driver, but also a less, I know we call him the Iceman, but a less heated driver who would be more willing to be Seb Vettel's rear gunner. And that's not Kimi at the moment.
And it's interesting, I don't think Ferrari have given a Formula One driver their debut since the 60s. You know, so they just don't do young drivers. It's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, he's third in the championship. So if you just look at that, then it's not...
Yeah, that was a surprise to me last week, and it's still a surprise to me this week.
But it's... I mean, I agree. I think he should be in Formula One. But from a Ferrari point of view, you kind of got to look towards the future. I mean, Vettel's quite young. You need a younger driver to push him. And it's great you're saying Vettel's... They're all friendly and it's great, but as we've seen from Max Verstappen going into Red Bull, you know, you need to push the number one driver.
Yeah, has any team really done well through both drivers getting on all the time? Is that? It doesn't strike me as a sport where team harmony is great.
Probably the one that sticks out most in my mind is David Coulthard and Mika Hakkinen at McLaren. I mean, they got on very well. They still have a fairly good friendship.
You know, he drove into him at Austria.
Yeah, and if you remember that first race of the season when Mika won his first championship, David actually moved out of the way to let Mika Hakkinen by because they had a gentleman's agreement. Now that's...
I mean, that is ridiculous, really, isn't it?
Exactly. So, but they enjoyed a lot of success and they got on very well. But I mean, we are talking, what, 90s? I mean, that's a long old time ago. No, I can't remember other teams where you've got that much successful culture. You know, you've got your teams, you've got your guys further down the field that haven't enjoyed those winning ways, and they maybe get on, but that just shows you that they haven't got the willingness to tear each other's throats out if it was on the line.
Given you're a man who sort of owns a prancing horse, although it's more of a sort of galloping horse, I suppose, but it's close enough, the analogy works.
It's a horse
of a car. Well, we're also hearing Valtteri Bottas say some words which effectively make it sound like he's got unfinished business at Williams, i.e. he's got nowhere else to go, so he will probably be staying there, probably as a result of, or partly possibly as a result of there being no seat at Ferrari.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, in some ways I think Bottas is almost too good for Ferrari at the minute. Because, to be honest, Ferrari haven't really lived up to what they were hoping this season.
Or last season. Or the season before. How long do you want me to go back, Rich?
But, you know, it's been a long time since Ferrari have been that, you know, the championship, you know, real constant race-winning team that we saw, as we discussed earlier, like in the 90s and even throughout some of the 2000s. And, you know, I think Bottas, I think, would, he needs to go to a top team. He's definitely good enough. But I mean, at the minute, there's other top drivers who are there. Are they going to turf one of those out to take a chance on him? I mean, it'd be worth it. But and he should, you know, definitely could win a race, win a world championship.
There's a conversation to be had about Williams as well, because I think now that the engine advantage has disappeared, their chassis seems to have been found to be pretty coming up short this year. So, you know, if that team isn't at the level it is this year, next year, if it continues that trajectory, then, well, there'd be question marks over who would actually want that seat if you're a talented, promising and ambitious driver. Imola. It's a bit of a suggestion today that they've signed a contract to host the Italian Grand Prix or replace Monza on the calendar. Is there a word for anyone would like to give if Monza wasn't on the calendar this year? And this is a conversation that's been going on for a while now.
It's just you can't replace Monza with Imola's a decent track, but it's kind of had its day. I've seen a few bike races in recent years, and it's a decent bike track, but I think F1 races, I think F1's sort of outgrown it really. And also Monza's just Monza. It's just everything that's great about Italian motorsport, and I think there's still a long way to go. I think Monza can still keep it, but yeah, I really do hope Monza do keep it.
Could be a Bernie tactic to give them a little nudge.
Well, if they want to bring Imola in, bring it in, but it's the San Marino Grand Prix as it used to be. It doesn't need to be the Italian Grand Prix in a different country.
Yeah, 20 in a different country. 22 races, why not?
Yeah, well, we've got a number of reasons why not. Firstly, the amount of money it takes to keep up a track, the amount of money that Bernie demands from it, the certain standards that a track has to be at to be able to host a Formula One race. I mean, I'm with you, Carl. Lovely track, got great memories of it. You know, it's produced some fantastic races. And you know that the Italian motorsport fans will turn out in their droves. They always do. But is it to replace Monza? You can't replace Monza. I mean, Monza's one of the top five, top three most storied circuits on the calendar. I mean, it would be a travesty.
If you had to do anything, at most, give them a season off from hosting the race and then let them just sort the circuit out, let them do it all up and then take it back there for the following year. And, you know, it'd be renewed. You could have everything there. Obviously, they just need the money, because obviously Italy isn't the richest place in the world, so they'd struggle.
Or work it with the 1 year on, 1 year off, like they used to do between the Nürburgring and Hockenheim in Germany. You know, work that kind of agreement out. But yeah, I mean, you can't remove Monza. It's such a demanding track. You know, and you go from so fast to so slow, and then you're waiting and waiting and waiting to just get on the throttle, and it's just agonising, and then suddenly, bam, you're gone and you're rocketing down again.
It's the names of the corners as well. Parabolica, Ascari, Curva Grande. Where do you get that in the world?
And they have plans to modernise parts of the track, because they came out a couple of months or so ago. So the plans are there for 2017. So there's obviously a lot of working in progress. We'll see how it goes. I mean, San Marino could be a nice honeymoon destination next year. Now, I don't normally read these things out, but it was a Lewis Hamilton interview I think I saw randomly posted on an Australian website, but taken from a Sky Sports interview. And it was about him talking about turning negatives into positives. So I'm going to just read what he said. If you imagine me, I'm Lewis Hamilton speaking now. I'm not going to do a Lewis Hamilton impression, stroke accent, whatever. And he's talking about turning his negatives into positives and his reaction to races as he's developed. I look at Barcelona, for example, this year. It was a massive low for me. There's things you won't know until I retire that I tell you that I experienced. I got up the next day and went for a run. That's my process. Through my run, I'm thinking about lots of different things. It's crazy to think that the 43-point deficit I had at the time, which seemed impossible. I'm only human, so these days I feel like it seemed impossible. You've just got to keep going, as painful as it can be, as hard as it can be. You might get over it quickly, it might take longer, but you just have to keep going. It's not how you fall, it's how you get up from those experiences that you can become stronger. I feel I'm stronger right now than I was at the beginning. I don't do everything perfect. I make mistakes. These days when I thought the world's coming to an end, I'm never going to win this championship, blah, blah, blah. I have those same things we all have. Somehow I tried to find the positives in it. Look where I am now. I'm 1 point behind in the championship. I'm even surprised. I'm like, if I had given up at 1 point, it just shows you to never, ever give up, no matter what. And I guess that leads him to where he is. On a flip side of that, there's also this suggestion that they could take a double engine penalty for Lewis to circumnavigate the penalties. Just to try and simplify this, he's used all four of his engines. If he uses a fifth this season, he gets a penalty, which tends to be a 10-place grid penalty. But there's a suggestion he could be given two new engines at one race, which would then give him a spare engine for the rest of the season. And because of the shenanigans last year, his 10-place grid penalty would just be turned to starting at the back of the grid, which is neither here nor there, essentially. Is this genius or taking the out of the rules?
Well, I think McLaren and Honda did it quite a lot last end of last season. They were taking two engines. I think they changed the rules halfway through last year, didn't they?
When Jenson Button had 158 grid place penalties or whatever it was.
So the only problem, if he does take those two engines one time, obviously if there's any upgrades towards the end of the season, Rosberg will have them and he won't. So it's kind of depends on how good the upgrades are going to be and also the track he chooses to take them. I mean, Monza might be a track he might take because you can overtake there, and especially Mercedes engine, you'd hope. Yeah, it's just a bit of tactics really of when he takes it.
This is getting very tactical and strategic, isn't it, in terms of when they take the penalties and which Grand Prix.
Yeah, I mean, this is almost the gamesmanship element of it. We're not talking about racecraft here. We are talking about knowing the rules and being able to exploit every inch of the rules. And
are you happy with that?
Am I happy that people,
if they go and do it like that?
Yeah, I think I am. I think when you're looking at the kind of drive and commitment that these sports, you know, men, these athletes, these people, however you want to say it, these drivers have and these teams have, and the money that's invested in not only them as individuals, but the teams and the races and what have you. We've said before, Mike, I mean, you've mentioned about Nico Rosberg not having the teeth. If you are not willing to take every single inch that you can, then you are not going to be a world champion. And so if Hamilton's happy to do it and Mercedes are happy to do it and they are within the rules, I have no qualms about it.
Flip side, do you think the other teams would complain about it if they did it?
I mean, if they can do the same thing, then I think they wouldn't worry too much. I'm pretty sure that, I mean, Renault last season and Honda especially, you think how many penalties they picked up from engine bits and pieces. So I think, you know, if they suddenly started complaining at Mercedes, so they could say, well, what about you last year? You know, you gained so much ground, you could say, this year because of all the troubles. But it seems a bit daft in some ways. Obviously, it's trying to save money with the engines, but it's like, maybe just give them an engine, let it work. It seems amazing that after 2 hours at most of racing, that the engine, after, well, two, it times that by four, so 8 hours, the engine's broke. And you think, really?
Well, I suppose we moved on from the qualifying engines, at least, where they lasted two laps and blew up. Right, we're going to go a bit old school with a couple of things now. I know we touched on this a few weeks ago, but Caterham's old base at Leafield is for sale. I presume it's still for sale. I haven't seen that it's been sold, but it's all still there. You can find it on the internet and we'll tweet the links. Basically, as they all ditched it and put the locks on, it's all still there for sale. Shall we buy it? That was my question. We've obviously got Patreon, so people are getting involved. Apparently, they're willing to accept offers in excess of £5.5 million.
How much have we got on Patreon right now?
It's a little short of £5.5 million. A little short.
Well, how little?
I mean sort of 5.499999. A lot of nines.
Oh, right. Okay.
Probably say like a million times short.
A million times short.
That'd be about right, wouldn't it?
Probably. Yeah.
But you've just read Lewis Hamilton's quotes about never giving up.
Never give up.
3 points could be like that. 4 point whatever it was.
Yes,
I can echo those. When I was 2, 3, whatever age, I said car. I was saving from that age, dreaming of buying a V8, and then I did it.
Amazing. So,
well, how about this? How about everyone now listening to this podcast, and whoever listens to the podcast, whenever you listen to it, tell every single person you know, get on Patreon, and we could fund the world's first publicly funded Formula One team.
Oh my God, now we really will be changing Formula One for the better.
It's almost like a Kickstarter.
I mean, can you imagine it? Us moving into that factory, there's nothing in there. I mean, I was thinking, my next question was going to be, what would we do with the building? I mean, I was thinking we could do a live podcast for everyone turns up, but you run a Formula One team, it could be the other option.
If we get enough public funding, I think we call good. I mean, everyone can take out mortgages and second mortgages, and we'll mortgage our entire financial future and everything. And if we got it, we'd be able to run a Formula One team.
I'll tell you what, as well, with our ties to Ford, we could probably wangle some engines out of it.
We have ties to Ford. Well, DT does.
The Fiesta ST, that's 1.6 litre turbo engine.
I mean, could we just race your Mustang? Would that be allowed in the Formula?
It's a V8, so probably not.
Josh could be one of our drivers. Kyle's got some experience.
Yeah, I was just hoping I'd get a drive, actually. But yeah, they're probably better.
You
do
the reserve driver.
I'll do the simulator work. We got a simulator. We did the stuff at the start of the season with Go Racing events in Norwich.
Well, see, there you go. You know, we are a...
I'll tweet that video link again.
We are a rich heritage of racing. I mean, in all seriousness, we are a rich heritage of motor racing in Norfolk, and fantastic vehicles have been produced here. And it is a shame to see something that actually has produced, you know, a race competitive car.
Yeah.
Well, no, hey, it made it on the grid.
It did when it was Arrows. Yeah,
exactly. So,
I mean, the other problem is it's not in Norfolk, is it? Maybe we should try and buy the old Hingham site.
Oh, yeah, we should.
I don't know if that's for sale. I'm guessing it might be cheaper than 5.5 million. Maybe we should investigate.
We could just,
Mike Gascoigne, if you're listening, give us a shout.
We could just squat and
circumnavigate the payments and literally just move in.
Yeah. Okay, we go.
Well, unfortunately, you wouldn't gain any squatters' rights, as the premises has probably never been used as an official domicile before. So,
and that's that. All right. Well, we're just putting it out there. If anyone wants to help us fund our own Formula One team, I mean, that escalated quite quickly, I've got to be honest, we'll do it. I think we've got the expertise. I mean, we love Formula One. What could possibly go wrong, Kyle?
So how much do we need then? Probably 100 million.
Well, let's just say 5.5 million to buy the place. Baby, and then
baby steps. We've got to, let's get the building first, right? And then we'll tackle the other problems.
I think Tony Fernandez and when he came into Lotus Racing was planning to do it on 40 million quid. That's less than 100 million.
That's true.
Pocket change. Positive. Compared to what you were saying.
Positivity.
And that's under 50 million quid with the building.
That's all good.
I mean, you know, it's coming down.
If everyone also spends 2 quid on a Euro Millions ticket and if one person wins 100 million or something, just done.
Oh, and then it would just happen. But then they wouldn't get involved in Patreon, which for the record is Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. Predominantly to help us spread the NRF1 word. We're just looking at little amounts regularly so we can help get more people to listen to the pod, enjoy it, enjoy what we talk about. Same token, if you want to help us build a Formula One team, well, you know, we'll have a go at that too. It'll be fine. I can't see any flaw in the plan.
A Red Bull thing and have two with the same name but one in Spanish.
It's in Italian, isn't it?
I don't know.
We could do it in Spanish if you want.
Well, we could be their third, their like cousin team.
We could do
the Norfolk Red Bull team.
The Norfolk Red Bull team. What would we call it? It'd be like the Ass Red Bull.
Ass Red Bull. Roy Red, innit?
Roy Red Bull.
Roy Red Bull. Everyone listening in Norfolk now hates us.
They should love us. Anyway, I'm going to move on now because, although on a similar subject, but again on Caterham, have we really been going for 20 minutes? God, this is gold. There is a race coming up. Jarno Trulli is suing Tony Fernandez for £1.3 million and a Formula One car, apparently.
Jarno, if you're listening and if you win and you need a team to race that Formula One car in, come see us. Because we're setting one up.
Seriously, we could use this car and the money, to be honest. Yeah. And Jarno knows Norfolk.
And we'd give him a drive.
To be honest, Tony would probably give us the money instead of him. Anyway, Trulli's issued a High Court writ alleging that Fernandez still owes him £700,000 in wages and he's not received the promised 2011 Team Lotus car. Obviously him and Heikki Kovalainen, Norfolk legend, soon to be indoctrinated into the Hall of Fame probably. Watch this face. They both signed for 3 years, but they only raced for two, 2010-2011. Didn't score a single point, of course. Trulli is now competing in his own Formula E team. He said he was promised £4.6 million in cash and benefits over the three seasons when he first signed up. In the event, he only raced for two seasons and he then, of course, retired in 2012. Apparently, in June 2013, there was a settlement reached where Trulli would be paid £1.3 million in cash and advertising rights, as well as being handed the 2011 race car with steering wheel, steering column dampers, pedals, and camera housing, but with no engine, gearbox, or electrical components. I love this detail. It's brilliant. And he claims he's been paid £615,000, but he's still owed another £700,000. I mean, We'll take that money. It'd be a good start to the fund. I'd be fascinated.
Well, all I'll say on that is, if you'd been better and hadn't not won so many races, then the team would have been more successful and you'd have probably had an extra year of driving. So really, Jarno, it's your own fault. We won't blame Heikki, because Heikki's golden, as we know. But Jarno, get it together.
Well, Judge Ped giving his opinion there.
It's the legend of the train. You've got to love him just for that.
Yeah, the Truly Train. Yeah, Truly Train.
Oh.
You don't know the Truly Train?
No.
The Truly Train was the stack of cars that used to get caught behind Jarno, especially when he was driving for Force India. Am I right in that? Did he drive for?
It was Toyota.
That's it, Toyota. Yeah, Toyota.
He was at Renault before that, wasn't it? And then I think he was at Renault with Fisichella maybe, or Alonso, and then he moved, and then, or Alonso came in and he...
But this was because he was so quick in qualifying, you know, if you can't...
Yeah, he's so quick in qualifying, gets ahead of everyone, and then he's so up in the race.
Okay, what else? We've already mentioned Patreon, iTunes, nrf1.uk/is on iTunes, if you can give us a rate and review and help us spread the word that way too. Apologies if that or our website address, nrf1.uk, haven't been working recently. Weird gremlins. I'm reliably informed everything is sorted now. I'm sure it is, he said, as I tried to sort it all out myself. Right, well, that's all the news. I'm pretty sure not all of that was latest, but there we go. That is news. It's time now for some tweets and social. Right, first of all, Kieran Cousins, thank you so much for the Silverstone videos. We posted one of them up after the race weekend. Hope you enjoyed yourself at Silverstone. It looked like a blast from where we were watching. I spent the day at Snetterton for the British Superbikes, and I'm going to be posting a video up on that. I know there are only two wheels, but if you wanted to see what it's like as a journalist covering an event like that at Snetterton, behind the scenes and everything, we will post a link to that video once I get around to posting it up online. That will be around the houses somewhere. I'll also post the picture of Kimi Raikkonen smiling in the cafe. I forgot that I mentioned that last week. Kimi Raikkonen really smiling in a photo, so you'll get to see that. That's in the walls at Snetterton. Graham Hill as well is on those walls too. Lots of Formula One stars who have raced and won at Norfolk's premier track. What more could you want? That's why we deliver this podcast from this wonderful part of the world. We had a tweet from Andy Whitney. Good evening, Andy. Just on Formula One safety, naive thought, scrap the halo concept and improve helmets. Significantly strengthen them, integrate with crash structure, add heads-up displays, driver-controlled cameras, super high-tech. Could that work?
Got no idea, to be honest.
I mean, it sounds like Andy knows more about it than we do, yes. But clearly this is high-tech stuff. I mean, it's almost like driver virtual reality that is really reality, but saves their heads.
Yeah, I mean, part of the severe head trauma that actually causes the damage is the fact that when you're moving particularly fast and you come to a very sudden stop, whilst you may stop and your head may stop safely and be cushioned, your brain is still going to move forward and it collides with the inside of your head. That's what causes a bruising, that's what causes your concussions, and that's what causes severe brain trauma. And until you can stop that, you're still always going to have a risk. So what you try and do is, with the halo concept, is you're trying to avoid any form of collision to the head. That's when you allow the neck muscles and the rest of the body to almost provide that whiplash effect, which is what cushions your brain and stops it from hitting the inside of your head. Anyone who has any kind of medical knowledge out there, if I'm wrong, please tell me. This is just what I've picked up. And the reason that is because you've probably, regulars just probably know I'm a big American football fan, and concussions and brain injuries and things like that in American football, in the NFL and in college football is huge concern. And so I read a lot about it, and you probably can make the helmets safer. At the moment, the helmets are probably designed to just be particularly hard, as in to stop things penetrating them or breaking through them. And I'm sure Felipe Massa is entirely happy about that after driving behind Rubens Barrichello's Brawn and getting a spring in the face, that, you know, the helmets are that solid. But could you probably do something to the inside of the helmets to provide more of a cushioning effect so that the head actually slows better and there's less chance of the brain being damaged? Yeah, you probably could. But ultimately, when you're driving at 200 miles an hour, any blunt force trauma to the head is always going to be significant. So, I mean, it's a possibility there, and I'm up for anything that removes the halo concept. But I think ultimately you've got to look at safety for the drivers first.
I mean, a couple of teams have come out and said maybe we should postpone the halo for next year, which does make sense because we still haven't got a definite design or whatever, and we're nearly in August. So.
And it surprises me that they haven't, because they usually do. I mean, this is why you have a feeder team or a feeder series.
trial it in GP2. See how it works in GP2. See how it works in other single-seater formulas. I suppose the downside with that is that the other single-seater formulas are not as fast and are therefore potentially not viewed as dangerous, therefore don't have the same levels of crashing. But really, you know, if you want to see how feasible it works on a large scale on a single-seater vehicle, there are other formula that you can try it in before you go and absolutely F up the look of one of the, you know, the best motorsport divisions on the planet.
Yeah, I've also actually got a kind of blog coming through at some point, similar to this kind of
thing. When I post it, sorry, Rich.
That's all right. But the conclusion I came to was, is it necessarily needed in Formula One? You know, not sure, but maybe Formula One, because it's got that overall brand image over the world of being the safest, the most advanced sport, or, you know, form of motorsport anyway. Maybe they're thinking, let's bring it into Formula One so they can see how safe we're making it and then feed it through down that way. But it's, you know, it's going to be interesting. It seems a really late decision to come through. One thing we will say, the one they had in the test, the Halo they had in the test, the Halo 2, I think they called it, I thought looked better because it was smaller, not so obvious. But it's still not great.
It does seem very sporadic as to how it's going to stop and actually provide any protection. That's the weirdest thing for me, whether it'll actually do its job.
What about? So we know the technology already exists that provides vehicles where things like spoilers are deployed when you reach a certain speed to help the car stick to the ground, and air brakes automatically react when you need to do X, Y, and Z. How about a halo system that only engages, comes up and engages when a car reaches a certain speed, and then when it's slower in the corner, it drops back down again? So, because it's only the higher speed stuff that really is going to likely to flip your vehicle. And then, of course, it can have a collision recognition sensor. I mean, this is some high-tech stuff now.
Surely you could just have a sensor pointing up from the dashboard almost of the car. They turn on when they're racing, and as soon as anything comes across that line, bam, you've got something that sticks up. Or
clearly, there are hopefully some very intelligent people. No disrespect, gents, but more intelligent than us who are working on this.
And more capable than us.
And hopefully, we can't do that as well. We're trying to sort of Formula One team here. We can't, you know, crowdfund Formula One safety too. But we will obviously try if need be, because we're here. We're here for you, Formula One. Don't worry. Brilliant question, Andy. Thank you so much for that. And that is a debate that we will be rolling on, especially as we get towards the Halo decisions and what have you. And of course, it's probably a pertinent point at the moment, given that the last week, of course, we reflected on the anniversary, 1 year anniversary of Jules Bianchi's death following his accident at Suzuka. Obviously, sad. So much has been said about the talent of the guy, and we all remember that fondly. Worth just having a look on the Twitter feed at the NRF1. There was a little gif of Bianchi's move on the inside of the final of Raskas, I think, wasn't it, at Monaco, that earned Marussia their only point, I think, at that point. It was a take on a Caterham, and even then I think we were fully appreciative of just what Jules had about him. So I think that's a way of remembering his talent, most definitely. Right, we are going on in terms of time-wise, but we've got our latest installment from the Dats Life podcast, boys. Now, this week, it's their second installment. They've decided to take exception to a wee favourite of ours. Here are the boys.
Hello, NRF1. It's Dave and Tom here. Thanks for having us back.
Thanks for having us back, yeah.
Yeah, and so British Grand Prix just been another fantastic race, but we're going to talk today specifically about the use of the safety car. Now, whilst it was greatly amusing to see Mark Webber and David Coulthard run around fighting over an umbrella,
getting soaked,
it unfortunately meant that we had to start the race behind the safety car. Now, this is becoming quite a theme in Formula One. And I've got a question, Tom. When was the last time we had a wet start to a Formula One race? Any idea?
Well, that would have been back in 82. I've got no idea.
From my memory, it was the 2012 Malaysian Grand Prix.
Ooh.
So 4 years ago. I think that's right. There could have been one in between that, but I'm not too sure.
Was that a clean, like, first lap, or was there like a big incident or anything?
Not that I remember, but it just shows the precedent that Formula One is going down, where things have become very, very, very safe. And it's not just Formula One either. Because I'd like to point out that Le Mans this year, Le Mans 24 Hours, the first hour of the race, the drivers were stuck behind the safety car.
Seriously?
Because it started in wet conditions. It was almost ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Know?
I think to start the race, to have the first lap or two where the cars can just get a lap and kind of see where the wettest parts are and warm up the tyres and get a feel for the track, I think that's fine. But then, say, have like a standard two laps and then racing.
Have a normal rolling start.
Yeah, and it was lap six, I think, when it got to race, and it wasn't dry, but there was one, I think it was Force India, said, how long do you think until slick tyres?
Yeah, that says
it
all, really.
The fact that they're thinking about that is just a joke.
It is a bit ridiculous, and it's crazy because as soon as the safety car went in, I think 10 drivers instantly went into the pits to change onto the intermediate tyres. I mean,
what is the point of the wet tyres if you can't race with them?
That's an excellent point. Why have wet tyres? Why even start the race if they can't race?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you might as well just postpone the race. Now, I understand that they can't do that because of contractual obligations to TV times. Obviously, there's Wimbledon and the football that day. But it's absolutely ridiculous that they should have, in my opinion, they shouldn't have started. If it wasn't good enough to race, don't race.
I think if they had a lap, say, just to get used to the track and see where it's wet, then they're paid a lot. They're very, very skilled and they know the risks. So, and I think the fourth key thing is they want to race. Like they are here to race.
Exactly.
Let them race and show off their skills in the wet where it's a little bit more tricky. You know, this is what the fans love and love
to see. That's what they paid to see. That's what people have paid at Silverstone to watch the best driver. And like you say, think of Ayrton Senna in 1993 at Donington Park, where he went from fifth to first in the first lap in the wet conditions. That would never happen these days because he wouldn't even get that opportunity.
Exactly.
My argument, though, as well, why didn't they just start the race behind in virtual safety car conditions? Why need the safety car at all?
True.
They've got the virtual safety car. Use that.
I think we're getting to the point where you're beginning to lose a bit of the heart and soul of what F1 is.
Thanks very much, guys. I hope that's a little bit of food for thought for you, and we'll see you all again very soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
So, gents, thank you so much for that, Tom and Dave. Safety car starts, we'll add to it very briefly here. Anyone a fan? Anyone like safety car starts in the wet? Should we just let them race and get on with it? And also the length of time it takes? Come on, have your say, gents. Have your say.
There's nothing wrong with safety car starts, but they need a safety car which is capable of doing a decent speed for the drivers. You think, for so long, you've had McLaren, you know, willing to supply every team with electronic bits and pieces. And you think, why don't they just get like a P1 out or something with all this incredible downforce which can handle the rain, can handle the road, stick it on the track, it can go around at a good speed, it probably dispense more water than the Mercedes SLS they're using at the minute. And you think, that car, when you see the current safety car, it's so tail happy. And you think, like at Silverstone, you saw it in the wet, and it was Hamilton was saying it needs to go faster, and it couldn't because it just didn't have the downforce, didn't seem to have the grip. I think maybe it's time to upgrade the car, get something better, forget maybe the sponsorship deal that no doubt goes along with it, and give the driver something better to sit behind.
But they were all running with masses of spray. Should we not just let them get on with it? And if they can't hack it, then they're going too quickly? Can it work like that? Can you trust them like that or not?
Well, I think it just proves when the safety car came in, they all jumped on the intermediate tyre.
Yeah. So what was the point?
What's the point of the wet tyre way? I think I understand that starting behind the safety car because those conditions were the first of the weekend, but just two laps, that's all they needed. Just a full lap round, second lap that comes in, and then they go.
That should be the point of a safety car start. It should be to get them through the first few corners cleanly, in order, so there's no collisions, because that's where the danger is. You know, you all barrel down to this first corner at high speed from zero to go, almost back down to zero again. And really get them around that first lap, get everyone fine, and then just say, right, now off you go racing. Now, if the guy who's in third place thinks he can, you know, shoot down and maybe have a go on the inside at the first corner and go clattering off, that's then on him. You don't have to race 5, 6, 7 laps under a safety car to say, okay, now it's safe enough for you to go racing. Because I think that, you know, if it's really, really that bad in the rain, you'll send the safety car out again. But it's very rare we see that. We see it start under safety car conditions. One or two laps, get people up to speed, job done.
And that is the end of Tweet and Social for this week. Don't forget, get in touch with us at the NRF1 on Twitter, facebook.com/NRF1podcast, or email us nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And get your questions and comments in, and the boys will talk about them. Guess what? There's a Grand Prix this weekend. I think we should talk about it. Hungary. Now, we had a quick mention from you, Ped, early on. As I say, and I will tweet a picture of this, it's the camel on the skateboard track. Force India are desperate to chase. Look at it. It definitely is. Force India are looking to chase Williams for the Constructors' Championship. P4, they're eyeing there. Toto Wolff is worried about Red Bull's performance. He reckons they're going to be pushing Mercedes quite hard around here to, you know, suggest it's going to be a great weekend, Rich.
I hope it is. I mean, it's thrown out some cracking races in the past. I mean, we especially saw last year how crazy it was, obviously, with everyone giving 100%, especially after Jules Bianchi's sad passing away. But it's, you know, it's a brilliant track. It has been for a long time. My favourite memory is 97, Damon Hill in an Arrows, and he just...
Epic!
In the lead, happily going fine, and then suddenly, oh, the car's stuck in third gear. And he still managed to get it home. Unfortunately, losing that to his teammate, who he did try and push off the road, which is a bit always...
Where did he learn that from?
Well, yeah, that's it. But, no, it's a good racetrack. And it's funny because it's... You look at Mercedes, they've had quite a big advantage. Is that really going to be knocked out so much this weekend?
And it's back-to-back with Germany as well. So we've got the German Grand Prix happening pretty swiftly afterwards.
Yeah, it's a sort of favourite track of mine because... As a British point of view, it's been some pretty good success over the year. Damon Hill got his first win there. Button got his first win there. I think Mansell won the championship in 92 there. I think Hamilton's record is pretty special there as well. So
Ricciardo got his first win there as well, didn't he? So there's lots of drivers who have had their first victory in Hungary.
Daniel Ricciardo, you mean, yeah?
Apologies.
Who has won more Hungarian Grand Prix than Hamilton?
Schumacher.
I'm going to say Vettel.
It's me and my trick questions. I'm sorry, no one has, but he's... I know, what a bastard. Just a bastard. But
I think we should just stage a walkout one of these days. Just leave Mike in here asking himself trick questions.
I'd enjoy it, but no one would listen to it. That's probably the difference. Michael Schumacher is the only other one person to win four. So it's him and Lewis on four. Last time Lewis won?
2013.
Correct. It was Rick Ricciardo in 2014, and Sebastian Vettel won it last year. Anyone remember that?
Yeah, the chaos the first lap, wasn't it? The Mercedes chaos.
Mercedes chaos. So obviously we're really looking forward to it. Most important weekend for
Ferrari, because it's been quite poor recently, just to get a half decent result.
Terrible.
I'm going to say Ricciardo.
Yeah, but do you just want to say that? Or?
No, I think that is you know, he won his first race there. He's a good driver, and he hasn't won a race this season, and it'd be good for him to get a win to get some more points, and I think he deserves it because he's had some cracking drives.
Obvious one is Rosberg. He needs to pull that gap out again, and he needs to break more than that, even if it's only, you know, a small amount of points difference. He needs to break the momentum. That's the key thing at the moment. Hamilton has the momentum behind him,
and that
he needs to slow that down.
And that is the probably the linking point between those two drivers, because both Rosberg and Ricciardo need to break their teammates' momentum, and pretty sharpish indeed. Right, it's predictions time, the latest prediction league, the important bit for us and you guys who get involved too. Just looking back at Britain, I had a pretty wretched weekend, and DT had the same kind of weekend, which just makes it wretched for him. Steve Rust did well. Kyle, so-so. And a word here, though, top performer was Kieran Cousins, who we mentioned earlier. Now, he apologised because he got them in slightly late, but apparently he had loads of schoolwork to do, and he was really, really busy. So I will forgive you, Kieran, if you go and tell all your friends and everyone you know who's a Formula One fan to listen to the podcast. Spread our word, and then I'll allow your performance to stand, which you should want because it was very good last week. So as the standings sit at the moment, Carl, you're still leading from Steve. Kieran's up to third, ahead of Sam Todd, myself, and Lucky Timur. Then we got Rich, Ped, Harris, Johnny P, Josh, and DT. Wasn't actually much changing around. It sort of settled into a pattern, which means people need to force change to make an impact. So let's get the latest round of predictions. Go on, Rich, you can go first. You're fiddling on your phone.
Well, I've written them down again, as I always do. I was a bit stuck, so I did ask some people at work for help.
Oh my God. You can actually other people's predictions claim. Yeah.
Well, one of my mates said it's going to be rubbish, so I didn't include that one because that was boring. So I hate
They're
it.
Normally your best one. Sorry, Rich.
But I've grown quite big again-ish, so I'm going to say, first of all, a split podium, so no 1-2 finish for any team. I'm going to say Palmer to finish ahead of Magnussen. This one, I have to give credit to my mate Matt Dyer. He put it forward for me to do. And it's that there will be a bird on the track, Canada style. Like, you know, the seagulls?
Yeah.
Okay, as long as you police that. And if anyone else sees a bird on the track, just the race.
Yeah, like, you know, like Canada style, where it's clearly on the track and it's on the camera and that kind of thing, right. Yeah.
But just the race.
Just the race, yeah. Not like, not just in the evening after
not
the race.
Not all weekend or so. No, I'm not watching all weekend looking out for a bird.
I will fly out there and put some bird seed down. So, no. I'm going to say someone will need a new front wing end of lap one.
Okay.
I'm going to say Carlos Sainz Jr. top five finish.
Oof.
Job done. There's your kudos point. Finito.
I'll go.
Go on, Carl.
I think Palmer will have a decent qualifying and actually get out of Q1.
Wow.
I think Hamilton will back up his form at Hungary. I looked last year and he's half a second quicker than Rosberg in qualifying, so he'll get pole again and win the race. I think there'll be two Red Bulls on the podium. I'll go Ricciardo second, Max third. Button will be in the points. And I'll go for the perfect prediction. And I'll go for Wöhrlein to pit on lap 12.
That's the one I love. Ped?
I'm going to go for three different teams on the podium and six different nationalities in the top six finishers.
Sounds great.
So you won't have two Germans in the top six. Okay. You won't have, you know, you won't have two Brits in the top six.
Six
or
nationalities in the group.
Yeah, if Vettel and Rosberg both don't finish in the top six, you probably
good chance. Probably there, right? Yeah.
He's clearly thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been looking at Carl's paperwork while Carl's been looking.
I think there's 12.
So
12.
Yeah.
Oh,
there you go.
So I'm going to say Hamilton to have the fastest lap of the race, but I am also going to say that there's I'm going to go all Red Bull second row in qualifying and a virtual safety car, but not an actual safety car in the race, obviously. And I've just made those up all off the top of my head, and we'll see how they go.
I love it. This is the way it needs to be, Ped. Which leaves me, and I will do likewise. So it'll be a Lewis fastest lap, pole and race win. I think he's going to get all three this weekend. I think that you will see Ricciardo finish ahead of Max Verstappen, and I think that you will also see Sergio Perez back in the top six. He'll be back on it. And then how about Williams? I think we'll have another pretty bit of a shocker. So let's say no Williams ahead of Sergio Perez. That makes sense, doesn't it? Because I said Sergio would be in the top six. I don't think there'll be a Williams in the top six, but effectively no Williams ahead of Sergio Perez. And how about, let's throw one out for a bit of, where is it? There are no Hungarian drivers, are there? So let's say, I don't think there'll be any Q1 surprises. So let's say you'll have two Manna, two Sauber. Is it five that go out in Q1? Six go out in Q1. So two Manna, two Renault, two Sauber out in Q1. And I'm going to predict that Romain Grosjean will finish 12th. So deal with that. Okay. And that's it. We're done for our pod. We will be back next week with a rattle through, of course, of Hungary and a look ahead to Germany, which unbelievably is the last race weekend before the mid-season summer break, which is nuts, but I could do with the break, so that's good. So we'll be back next week with all that stuff. As I said, you know how to get in contact with us by now. Rich, Kyle, Ped, thank you so much for your time. Thank you, everyone, for listening, especially as it's been a bit of a long one. We really appreciate it. More of you than ever before, which is fantastic for the NRF1. We're really, really enjoying this season. It's been a cracker so far. More to come.
And of course, if you haven't, check out the Facebook page for the video we are about to go live with on Rich's brand new monstrous Mustang.
Cha-ching! Cannot wait, Rich! Especially when I get to drive it. Thanks all. Bye for now. Enjoy Hungary.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which is brought to you by Acast. Like you, millions of people enjoy podcasts every week. Acast works with thousands of amazing shows, reaching the most engaged, loyal, and desirable audiences on demand. For more information about advertising, sponsorship, and branded content opportunities for your business, contact us using sponsor@acast.com.